Welcome to the What's Your Problem podcast. I'm your host, Amy Ball, and I'm joined today by Leon Street, business owner, Elevation.
Thank you very much, Amy. So I guess you want me to share a few things about who I am, what I've done.
Right? Yeah, it would be really useful for our guests to understand who you are now and how you got here.
Okay.
So but let's start with who you are now.
Yeah. So who I am now. So I'm a marketing mentor. So I help business owners to strategize and figure out the bottlenecks to their marketing and sales, in essence. And once they understand that, how to leverage it with systems to grow. I've been doing this particular type of mentoring, I would say, for about 10 years now. Mm-hmm. I've been in marketing for about 25 years, and that takes us way back, and we'll get into that as well. But that's what I do now. And the kind of results that I've helped clients to achieve are from 6 to 7 figure results from their marketing campaigns, and using some very simple techniques. A lot of people think, oh, what did you do, you know, to make that happen, and really leverage budgets and just thinking and keeping things simple. So that's who I am. Other things I've done. So 10 years ago, this month, I also won, and we're going back now, the best UK business podcast award.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, can you believe
that's
that?
That's why he's here.
I know, that's why we're here. So I thought, as I'm driving down to Milton Keynes, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, synchronicity, right? And then in 2018, I also wrote a book called More Leads, More Clients. I do have here, this is your copy, which I will be signing, guys. So you can see that as well.
Fantastic.
So it was an Amazon number one bestseller back in 2018. And it basically covers the principles of marketing. Mm-hmm. And the reason being, when I wrote the book, I knew at the time that technology ages. So if I focus on technology, it wouldn't really be worth anything. So the book is really about principles and how you apply it to growing your business.
And I think that's a really good place to start, because there's a lot of different technology around at the moment.
Yeah.
There's a lot of future-focused technology around at the moment. But I think there's an element for me that thinks about there's always a human connection. I think perhaps people think, oh, AI will solve everything. But I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were saying, AI will do, if you think about a problem of, I don't know, I need to post something on social media. Then you think, I need to post something on social media. I want it to be about marketing, for example, and how to get more leads for my clients. And so you plug that into an AI tool. The AI tool can then perhaps do steps 2 through to 8. And then you do the final piece of responding. So AI supports you, but doesn't take over the human element of what you're trying to do.
Absolutely. And I think just the whole topic of AI is, it's an interesting topic from the point of view of humanity and what makes us human. Because also what makes us human is wanting things to be easier, right? Because we like to enjoy other things and perhaps relax and not always focus on work. And one of the things I think is important to understand is that actually AI could do steps 1 to 10 if we're saying that's A to B. I think the challenge that people have right now is to understand, at what point are you going to inject you, your essence, your individual unique gifts into whatever it is you're creating. And usually it's going to be the message. You know, you've got some people who they create meme videos, they're influencers, and they're entertainers in essence, right? They're the modern age. You know, back in the day, we'd watch comedians on TV. They're the new entertainment. And there's a reason why they go viral, and people love, you know, to be entertained. But from the business perspective, the business owner who, let's say, they have a message that they want to share. They're not really entertainers, but they know they have something within them to share. I think this is the part where, when you start looking at how AI merges, that people can get lost, because they're like, oh, I need to be efficient. Gary Vee said, I need to post like 60 or 200 pieces of content a day. You know, I need to do X, Y, Z. And then you fall into this trap of, I'm now just a template machine, and I've lost me. And I think that's the real question. At what point do you see yourself injecting into those steps? Like, where are you going to show up? And it comes from the very idea, because even now people will ask ChatGPT or ask, you know, one of the, you know, large language models, and they're asking for ideas. They're asking for, what else could I talk about? Give me, and this is part of the problem, because the ideas and the essence is within us. But unless we sit and give ourselves time to think, whether it's writing down in our journal, typing up our ideas into a Google document, all we're going to be doing is regurgitating what, you know, zeros and ones we get from AI. And AI has been programmed. It's not, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not sentient. It doesn't have our level of awareness, consciousness, you know. And for me, this is the part that I think people are going to get lost in. You know, I mean, even now you've got AI influencer profiles on social media making hundreds of thousands a month. People actively following, like, it's, you know, invested time in a real person, and it's noughts and ones. And so this is scary.
It is very concerning. And I think if you just think about what you were talking about there about entertaining and what we do and how we like things, I posted something yesterday about, and it was a copy from somebody else's post, but I really liked it, where it was talking about like, share and follow your friends' businesses like you do celebrities that don't even know you're alive.
That's right. Yeah.
And that for me is so powerful because a business, you know, you can post and you feel like it's just flying in the wind.
Yes.
You don't know whether it's doing anything, and you kind of get, I don't know, 138 impressions, but no likes or no comments. And you think, did anybody like it? Do I continue? Do I stop? Like, how do I, how do I know unless people engage? And that's really interesting that as individuals, we're not necessarily supporting our closest friends and family the way that we support celebrities that are entertaining
us. And this is another topic in itself.
Like, we could do a whole hour on this, right?
We could talk about, like, what's blocking people from supporting people that they know, like, and trust, or even love, right? And for me, this is, it's part of the problem. If I am on social media and I do see stuff from people I know, I'll like their stuff. I'll like it. I'll click on it. You know, I'll even comment. Not all the times comment, but I'll definitely like it because I know it helps with the algorithms, you know, marketing, right? But I think it's important for people to understand not everybody thinks at that level. You know, like the phone is now the new TV. And with TV, for those, you know, born in the 90s, 80s and so on, we didn't have to click like on when we liked something. We'd go and tell our friends and talk about it if we liked it. And that was the most, right? And I think people miss the fact that now, if you are, you know, the kind of person who wants to support somebody you know online, it is important, but not everybody's going to do it. And I think that just comes back to society and how people think, whether people actually have an awareness to do it or whether they're just being lazy. Or, you know, they always say some of the people who are closest to you don't actually want you to succeed because it gets them to question themselves. And not everybody wants to look at themselves as to whether they're putting the effort in as well. And, you know, there's so many different things, but I'll just bring you back to one point. And I remember hearing it was a Bible story, and I'm not big on religion. Like, I wouldn't class myself as religious. I'm spiritual. But I remember, and I really don't remember the chapter or the verse, but I remember somebody shared it and they said, it's always the people closest to you that don't support you. But when you go afar or you go to another town, they're ready to support you and champion you because it's like you bring new energy. It's like a new person. And maybe somebody does know the verse and can comment below this or wherever this is posted. But I think it just comes back to your point. Just like, and this is the final thing I want to add to this. It's the kind of caveat. Don't get upset if people don't support you.
Yeah.
Just keep going. Yeah. And you did rightly say, you know, are you just talking into the wind? I think you said the nice version. Are you pissing into the wind is the correct term. It can be edited out if it needs to be. But here's the thing I want to get to. Once you create the content, that's the first step. Your job's not done. You need to share it to people. You need to get into DMs. You need to comment on other people's stuff on topics related to what you're talking about. Point them back to your profile. Tell them you've got, you know, an interesting video on the same topic. And this stuff takes work. But this more and more is where you can plug AI into it because then you can get that to work for you and leverage that side of, I guess, the coin.
And I think for small business owners, definitely where they don't have large teams of people doing this, this is the kind of thing that helps them do those things. Because I think, and I I think a lot of people say, and I think this is true, the more you do it, the more comfortable you feel. Yeah. Because it's at the moment, for example, you might have unconscious incompetence 100%. Or conscious incompetence.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the conscious incompetence makes you feel very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Same when you start any new thing, whether yeah. it's learning how to swim. I saw Simon Squibb say something about how do you learn to swim? Do you read a book? No, you don't. Yeah, you get in the water
right.
and you start moving mm-hmm. around in the water. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You walk around in it, you get comfortable in it. And that is how you start
yeah,
a business, is right. getting into it
yeah.
and kind of just launching into it. Yes, you do need to do a bit of research, yeah, of yeah. course.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same with a lot of things. I think, you know, even just commenting on social media, I often think, oh, someone else has already said that. Oh, okay, I won't say that. And I'm quite a confident individual, yeah. you know. Yeah. I'm not a shy, retiring mm-hmm. violet. I don't mm-hmm. think anyone would describe me as such.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think, oh, I'm not sure whether somebody wants me to do that. And I think there's an element of people feeling confident enough, even with the keyboard warriors that we know are out there, but it's feeling confident enough and kind of being able to do that. So support systems like, you know, AI helping you to kind of get into that actually... Yeah. works for people, doesn't it?
I think it's an important thing that you're saying as well. It's, you know, this is the self-consciousness aspect of who we are. Mm-hmm. We all have it. Doesn't matter how confident we are. We all have it to a degree. And especially, like you said, somebody's already said it, what's the point?
Mm.
Right? But actually, it is important because on a more... And look, I'm going to go there. On a more spiritual level,
mm-hmm.
there's going to be people who just resonate with you saying it rather than the other person. But at that point in time, we don't see it like that. We just see it as mm-hmm. a logical, somebody's already done it. So what's the point, mm-hmm. right? But the thing is, I might like your comment because I resonate with you more as a woman compared to the guy who wrote the comment, for mm-hmm. example, or the other woman, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the part that we miss out. And that's the part where... actually, we deny ourselves the opportunity to express,
mm-hmm.
and expressing who we are is important as human beings, never mind business owners.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that. I had definitely not framed it in that perspective before, and I think that's very true.
Yeah.
Because you do resonate with some people more than others. In a group of people, for example,
absolutely.
You're naturally drawn to certain people, aren't you? Or you'll chat more to some people
Correct.
Rather than others. For whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And it might depend on your energy or what's happening in your life at that particular point in time.
Exactly.
So anyway, this is about you.
Yeah.
we're already veering off.
It's good. It's good content.
So we know where you are mm-hmm. now, but what started you off on the entrepreneur journey, would you say?
What started me off? I wanted to make some money. And look, we're going back to, I'm 15.
Mm-hmm.
I was already DJing. So mm-hmm. I'm a DJ back then, back when it was vinyl. This is before the CDs kind of hit the scene. Mm-hmm.
And specific type of music?
Yeah, drum and bass. Mm-hmm. Yeah, drum and bass jungle. It's come back into, like, I don't know, let's say its own revival right mm-hmm. now. And it's actually pretty big. I'm seeing, especially on TikTok, seeing a lot of people
mm-hmm.
playing jungle. But anyway, so I'm 15 and the local record store that I go into, they sell CDs from local DJs, and I'm like, mm-hmm. So then I start basically at that time selling tapes to friends at school, making mm-hmm. a bit of cash. And that's where it came from. So I'd create mixtapes. And then eventually when I was 17, I got my first computer,
mm-hmm.
which had a CD burner. So now mm-hmm. I can create CDs.
Posh.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. So back at 17, I was burning CDs. And this is the part where, wouldn't it be great if you had hindsight?
Mm-hmm.
I was 17, creating my first website for me as a DJ. So mm-hmm. that's where, like, things really started to escalate, because I'm like, how do I get more people to see me? And now I'm uploading MP3s on my website. This is 1997.
Oh, I know. You feel like you could have created MySpace or something, right?
iTunes. So it's like, you know, when I think back, I'm like, gosh. And literally, I did this in a weekend. Like, I'm a very fast learner when it comes to things that I just want to fix as a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, what's your problem, right? And so I set up the website. I put mixes on there. And I remember at the time, people started to reach out to me. And now I'm sending out CDs, CDs to promoters,
mm-hmm.
To different people in the music scene. And they're like, who built your website? And I'm like, me. And that's where it came from. So mm-hmm. a few people started to inquire. built some websites, then some opportunities came up. And I remember at the time building websites for local councillors as well. I remember two particular people. I'm not going to say the parties because, you know, mm-hmm. how things are right now. But, you know, for me, it was cash. I didn't really care what party it was. I couldn't give two, you know, anyway. But...
Well, at that age, you don't. No. You're kind of like, this is great. This is money for doing something I enjoy doing. No, like, why would I not take it?
I'm like 17 doing A-levels. I'm like, this all, you know, adds to the pot. Mm-hmm. So anyway, fast forward to approximately, I think, year 2000. I'm working with these two guys who run a local studio, mm-hmm. not too dissimilar to the place where we are like right now. Mm-hmm. Kitted out all the music equipment, paid for by funds that they acquired.
In a way that was entrepreneurial.
Yeah, I can tell you my life is like, I've crossed paths with so many different industries, let's say. It's been interesting. But the key thing for me is I had access to a studio and they had cash. Mm. And we set up an internet radio station back in the year 2000. And I remember it was called rushfm.com, not to be confused with the Rush FM that exists or existed in London, but we set up our own. I didn't know how to set it up, but I figured it out. I'm a problem solver.
Well, you didn't read a book. You just got into it and kind of like, let's see what happens, right?
You know, going to learn to swim. Might as well jump in. Mm-hmm. So we did set it up. We had DJs playing all around the clock, Monday to Sunday, and it was great. And back then, you know, chat rooms were a big thing. So you'd mm-hmm. go into different chat rooms on, I think it was like Lycos was the search engine, like all these Alta Vista. And basically we were promoting and we'd get like hundreds of people coming onto the radio. And it just escalated from there. And then eventually after setting up these websites, more and more people started simply say, how do we get customers to our website? And it's like, new challenge. And mm-hmm. and that was the next step into what I did. And so now we're in, I'm doing my degree at this point, computer mm-hmm. studies, and I'm finishing around 2004. And I have this little agency on the side. It's probably making me about 10,000 a year at that point. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's good cash, you know, while you're a student.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, it was then, not so much now, but then, at the time, yes.
Exactly. It's like, it was good money. You know, things were cheaper, so it went far, you know.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I left uni and 3 weeks later, they offered me a placement. Mm-hmm. And this comes back to networking and mm-hmm. people supporting you. Mm-hmm. And so I had a good relationship with some of my lecturers at uni. I've just been good at networking, always have been. And it's because I'm just honest. I'm straight to the point and I don't try to be somebody else. Mm-hmm. And anyway, Steve phones me up, my lecturer. He says, Leon, there's a job going at the uni. He said, I think you'll be perfect for it. You don't know the programming language and what you need to do, but I know you'll learn it in no time. It was a 6-month contract. I finished mm-hmm. it in 5. So the last month I was just chilling, right? So that kind of gave me a more professional experience, like in terms of the industry. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, the department that I was working for was not a teaching department in the uni. It was European funded money that went to local SMEs in the West Midlands.
Okay.
So this exposed me to like more, I guess, ideas about money and business. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh. So anyway, I left. And then a few months later, they called me up and said, hey, Leon, we've got like a temporary contract, but we want to employ you through your business, like as a consultant. I'm like, perfect. Now my first big client is the University of Wolverhampton. Mm-hmm. All right. So again, it's another 6-month contract. And at the time, this is another lecturer, Ken Raby, I remember his name. He was like, Leon, like, there's actually a full-time position going here and I'd love for you to apply for the head developer, lead developer. But at the time, I'd never led anything. You know, I'd done my stuff. And so anyway, I say, okay. I apply for the assistant developer, mm-hmm. not the lead. I get that, even though I was encouraged to go for that. And within 6 months' time, I became the lead developer. So things escalated very quickly. So I've still got my business in the background, but now I'm working full-time for the uni. I'm working with a lot of SMEs. And then about 12 to 18 months down the line, I then take over a department and I'm managing about 12 developers, mm-hmm. and admin team. And like, I'm not joking. It's like, I didn't really do anything other than be myself and things just landed on my lap. And mm-hmm. like, honestly, things just came to me.
How was that first management experience?
It was fine. I'm very logical thinker when it comes to processes. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't that terrifying or like a problem for me. It was like, okay, when people would come to me, I'd be like, talk me through what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then I'd be like, here's what you need to do. So I mm-hmm. could I've always been like a person who could see things and mm-hmm. use my imagination and like, that's how you map it out. Very visual person. And so that allowed me to kind of run things really efficiently mm-hmm. to the point where, and now we're ticking along, we're around about 2008, mm-hmm. right? And now I'm not in the office so much because I'm out and I'm networking and I start networking for my business because I'm like, uni's cool, but there's too much politics. Mm-hmm. And I've risen really like high at that point in time. I was probably earning about 40,000 back then. And it just it just happened really quickly. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, this is cool. Bought the BMW, got the mm-hmm. house, you know, just got loads of debt.
Got all the trappings.
Yeah, all that stuff. It's like, I'm living the life. It's mm-hmm. like, yeah, you are, Leon. Yeah. And then I start going networking for my business because I'm like, I want something else. And I could feel like I just wanted more freedom.
Yeah.
Freedom of expression of who I am. And I couldn't deal with politics. And the bosses above me, I won't mention their names, just out of respect. I could see how they operated mm-hmm. and I wasn't interested mm. because I'm not the kind of person who kisses ass. And mm-hmm. I'll tell you straight if you're pissing me off or you're annoying mm-hmm. me. Like, or I'll be polite at first. I'm not like, I'll just go for your throat straight away. Probably will now because I've been doing jiu-jitsu for 5 years. But, you know.
I think there's an element of you start, as you get older, mm-hmm. you get more able to understand actually there are some points where of you course. Just let it go.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Whereas when you're younger, that level of understanding.
No, it's
there.
Just like, nah. So anyway, I start networking and people are like, Leon's not in the office so much. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing about it all, while this is happening, like I'm in for main meetings and stuff and I just say, I'm out with small businesses because that was part of the role, right? And they couldn't question me because all the team were delivering. They were using the systems mm-hmm. and we were always ahead of target.
Yeah.
And back then it was, you know, and I think this added to the credit crunch in like 2008, 2010, where public funding was all about, did you spend your budget rather than did you save money?
Yeah.
And we had to spend, and that was another aspect I didn't like. It's like, you had to spend money when there was no point in spending money. And that money is taxpayer money.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fully aware at the time. And like that part of the job, I didn't really like. Mm. Because in business, you're actually praised for saving money, you're making money.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in public sector, it's like spend, spend, spend. Yeah. I know they perhaps have a slightly different view now because of mm-hmm. what happened. But, you know, it taught me a few things. And because of those opportunities, I was able to leverage funding, grants, and it just woke me up to like, there's a bigger aspect to business here. Mm-hmm. And this is one thing I think your viewers and listeners will perhaps go through to some extent. And I thought it was the way, which is work as hard as you can for as long as you can. And it's not the way, because eventually you're either going to burn out or you're just going to come up with a problem that's just bigger than who you are right now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of that, isn't there? And that's what we're actually taught. And certainly, you know, if we think about our granddad, because we're cousins.
Yeah, that's right. That's another reason why I'm here.
Our granddad worked, you know, from the day he was probably about 14 or 15, I think he probably worked from.
Yeah, and you know, he was a World War II veteran.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he worked his entire life until he got retired, and he got a clock, I remember.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I've got the pictures of somewhere, my mum's got them.
Yeah. And he worked very hard to do that. And that was the point. My dad did the same.
Mm-hmm.
My mum is still working. She's, you know, going to retire soon. She'll mm-hmm. be glad for a quick name drop there. Well done, Jenny. Yeah. but she's going to retire soon, and she, you know, she's in her mid-70s.
Yeah.
But that was the goal. Work really hard,
mm-hmm.
buy a house, buy a car, buy two cars, go on one holiday, two holidays a year, get yourself in a bit of debt. Yeah. It's all fine. Don't worry, because you're going to work really hard to pay it off.
That's right.
Actually, and I think people now are definitely not like that.
Yeah.
The mindset has shifted into much more, well, actually, this isn't serving me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we look at, I don't know, Gen Z, if you like,
yeah.
They are very much, they're quite happy to tell you, this doesn't work for me, so I'm not going to do it. Thanks. And off they go.
Yeah.
I think our generation is still very much, let's talk about it and let's work out how we can make
it work.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, there are definite differences in generations. I've got an 18-year-old son, so that kind of ties me to that younger generation in a good way. And my son's been doing jiu-jitsu for about years now, seven years in December, actually. And one of the things that I've been able to use because of taking him to jiu-jitsu in the gym is an emphasis on actually going all in, mm-hmm. and giving it your all and challenging yourself. Mm-hmm. And some of the people that I come across, the younger generation, so like you say, that doesn't work for me. Rather than, actually, have you stopped for a moment to think that actually maybe you're not working for it, mm-hmm. right? And that's the other thing that I think is important. While, you know, people do have an awareness, sometimes we don't have an awareness to the point where we understand that actually the challenge is within us and we need to overcome whatever we have as a blockage in order to excel in whatever the thing was, mm-hmm. you know. And if it is a change in career, fine. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of people are quick just to change rather than understand, like, what am I facing here? And I'm a big believer in the challenges that are in front of us are sent to us so that we learn the lesson. Mm-hmm. And it may be at that point a decision to change, like mm-hmm. choice, mm-hmm. and make a choice. For other people, it's, no, this lesson has come back again, mm-hmm. in a different job, a different area, and I'm not responding to it and I haven't learned and therefore I'm not fixing it, and you go and change again and it's following you. And I think that's an important part of being a business owner. Mm-hmm. And coming back to your point of, you know, how do you learn to swim? You don't read a book. I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, whether they're starting up or existing. The existing ones, no, but the startups, the big thing is to put your reps in, like when you go to the gym. Mm-hmm. The more reps you do, the easier the exercise gets. Mm-hmm. The more reps you do, the easier your hour session gets. Mm-hmm. The more reps you do, the easier it becomes to make the decision to go to the gym. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's true in business. The more reps you do, the more you evolve, the faster you evolve, and the faster you figure out what your weaknesses are and what your strengths are. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important aspect. And I say that because for the younger generations who are watching this, as well as the older, whether you're a startup or not, is just to be okay with putting the reps in.
Yeah.
And don't, you know, be so quick to change. Oh, I don't like these products, this service, or the industry. Just, mm-hmm. you know, stick at it for a good amount of time so that you can then review yourself and say, what did I do? What did I put in? Mm-hmm. What did I get out? And I think if you take that approach to it, you'll see more of what you are looking for than you realize.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting because it depends what you're trying to do. Because if you've got a coffee shop, mm-hmm. then you don't necessarily, if all of your customers are saying this coffee is disgusting, yes, change it.
Yeah.
Like, we're not saying don't change it.
But don't change the whole business.
Yeah, don't change the whole business around. No. And I think there's an element of trying to understand, when was the last time you got actual customer feedback? Mm-hmm. And it's great when you're in a B2C business because you get that consumer feedback, whether you ask for it or not.
Yeah.
You're going to get that immediately on Google reviews, on Trustpilot, or whatever it might be. You're going to get it. You're going to get it both barrels.
Or comments on your content.
Yeah. Or comments on your content. Whereas I think B2B, it's a bit more challenging.
It can be. I think, I don't know how much there is now, but I think there's also a perception of I need to look or act professional when it's B2B. Mm-hmm. And I was all of that. Like I went through that whole process right around to the point where then I started just turning up in meetings in jeans and t-shirt like this. And it's like, for some industries that you do need to dress a certain way because mm-hmm. there is going to be a stereotype of who you are. Mm-hmm. And then eventually you're going to get to the point where you don't give a shit.
Yep, for sure.
But I say that with respect that you're still going to present yourself in a way that you feel is right for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wouldn't expect somebody to turn up, you know, looking like shit.
In their pajamas, which seems to be quite common.
And so I say that in the sense of B2B, the biggest thing you can do in getting feedback, I found, is to build strong relationships and be okay receiving feedback. Mm-hmm. There's times when I've, you know, in marketing, there's a million and one different things that can go wrong, as I'm sure you're fully aware, Amy, over the years. Websites, campaigns, ads, overspends, like just big mistakes that people don't care about because it's mm-hmm. not their budget, but they're working for you and you're working for your client and mm-hmm. they care.
When you send that email and it still says two first name instead of actually inserting the first name.
They're the basic things. But I'm talking about when you make a real big fuck up. You have to delete that one. But the point I'm getting to is just hold your hands up and say, I made a mistake. Mm-hmm. I've made plenty of mistakes, but the one thing that I'll pride myself on is that I've owned up to them ahead of the customer seeing, I would say 9 times out of 10. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy. It's hard. And it is humbling, mm-hmm. you know, especially if you have pride and strong pride. But out of it, you'll gain the respect of people. You may lose a contract. You may lose a client. Some people have got different levels of standards and it's mm-hmm. like, so be it. But you'll learn for the fact that you've said, I made a mistake. And I've made mistakes. And because I've explained ahead of time, not left it till the last minute, I've gained more respect than I realized. Mm-hmm. And that has led me to actually bigger contracts with the same client because now there's a different level of respect and communication. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important part, especially for B2B. So it's not always you need to get reviews. What you need to get is honest opinion, mm-hmm. honest feedback to the point where the person's like cool saying, you know, this part of the program or this part of the project or the campaign is shit. Mm. Like we got to make some changes here. And I remember this because one of my favorite clients in my old agency, I went into the business and within 15 minutes I'd done the deal. And it was the first time I'd ever sold that fast. And I was planning this whole presentation, one mm-hmm. hour, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah, back and forth. And he simply said to me, here's what we want. What's your price? The 15 minutes was simply negotiating. And then we shook hands and that was it. And he said, send me the contract and the invoice. And I was like, wow. So the point that I'm getting to is that when you're in business trying to act professional, sometimes, quite often, most of the time, you're going to find that it's not about being professional. It's about understanding human psychology. And mm-hmm. that's one of the biggest things that I learned and I love about marketing. Because mm-hmm. if you're willing to put your pride to the side and mm-hmm. just simply focus on what communication am I receiving? I remember my first business coach from 2008. And he said to me, communication is the response I get. And I was like, uh-huh. So whenever you get somebody who's pissed off at you, understand what communication did you send to them, right? Mm-hmm. What was communicated prior to that? Mm-hmm. And then if people are happy and then they go off and do something different, meaning they're kind of lying to your face, it's like, well, what communication was sent? And that for me was a big lesson that I've mm-hmm. learned over the years, not just in business. It's true in life with people, mm-hmm. friends, family. And I think, and we were talking about this before the podcast started, which is in business, you're going to have to make a lot of mistakes.
Yep.
And sometimes you might want to quit, like you were saying, mm-hmm. the younger generation. But the biggest thing you can do is not quit and keep going and mm-hmm. just own up to the mistake and understand what led you to it. Mm-hmm. So take some time to reflect on it. And there's a great book and I'm going to come back to it because I just haven't got it in the title in my mind right now. And I think in the book, he speaks about reflection time, the author mm-hmm. does. And I think a lot of people don't reflect on what they've done that day, that mm-hmm. week, that month, that year. Those years, mm-hmm. a lot of people just keep going and don't stop to think and mm-hmm. reflect. And I think that's an important aspect of growing your business because when you go to the gym, and I know you know this, obviously mm-hmm. being an experienced gym owner, in order to progress, a personal trainer reviews their client's performance with them, right?
Yep.
So that they know what they're going to do next month, next quarter. Mm-hmm. And in business, it can be a lonely place. And not a lot of people know that that's actually part of the process, which is to reflect on your own performance. Mm-hmm. And for me, if a lot of, you know, people got, you know, a simple message, especially about the growing aspect of the business and being professional, which mm-hmm. is you're going to make mistakes, mm-hmm. but review and look back on what you've done.
Yeah. And I see this quite a lot in successful business owners mm-hmm. is that's what they talk about doing.
Yeah.
And they reflect, you know, being, if it was you, for example, on being a husband, on being a father,
yes.
on being a business owner, on being a client, mm-hmm. on being a leader. I reflect on all of these things yeah. regularly mm-hmm. and putting time aside to actually do that.
Yeah.
Because I think we panic so much about, yeah. oh, I've got to be always doing something for my business. We don't think about time like that yeah. being part of our business.
That's
but
right.
actually, that's the bit that can really unlock your yes. success for the future.
Absolutely.
Is when you think, okay, well, let's look back on the last month or quarter or however you want to do it, whatever works for you in your business. It's not just about the actual business, but it's about you. How did I show up?
Yeah.
What did I do? How did I turn up for all of the, in all areas of my life? And actually, am I comfortable with how I turned up?
Mm.
And I guess that goes back to your point where you were talking earlier about communication.
Yeah.
Like, what did I send?
Yeah,
what did I send in these situations mm-hmm. to, like, I guess really for these people to be hearing what yeah. they're hearing? What yeah. did I send?
Absolutely. I think, you know, if we were to break business down to its simple form, I think it's your willingness just to keep going, but making sure that you take time out to review.
Mm-hmm.
And for sure. And I think the more you do that, like the better you get. Some businesses, they have it in place because of the team they hire.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you make a hire where that person is a natural manager of people. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, let's have a look at this. What's going on? And I think from what I've experienced myself and your willingness to look at your own performance and challenges and weaknesses, it is being able to take that feedback on board and make a change and not just say, this is how I am and who I am and that's it.
Yeah. Because sometimes we don't like it. We don't like that feedback from people. I was talking with a client the other day, and they have a subscription-based business, mm-hmm. and they were talking about the fact that they've had some people drop out and not adhere to the terms and conditions. Yeah. So they haven't paid what mm-hmm. they said they were supposed to be paying for. And so I said, well, you need to follow that up with those people.
Yeah.
And his concern was, if I do that, then those people will think, you know, that I'm only about money.
Mm.
And I thought, well, that's really interesting that that's the kind of path. Whereas my view is, actually, what they've done is they're taking the mickey out of you. Yeah. In my opinion, you're taking the mickey out of you. It's because my mum listens.
Yeah. I've spoke to your mum. I've heard that.
But they're literally reaching in your pocket and taking the money from you. And I've got an interesting take
on that. And you saying it shouldn't be okay. And you're 100% right. And I'm going to take you back again to a story, lesson from my first business coach. Like, there were so many things that I learned from him. Thank you, Kevin, by the way.
quick name drop.
Yeah.
Cheers, Kevin.
Yeah. So I had the same thing where I'd got invoices outstanding in my first agency, like thousands.
Mm.
And Kevin's saying to me, it's like, what's going on, Leon? Like, weren't you getting your money? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, people owe you money. And so, we sat down, he's like, so have you followed up? And I'm like, yeah, we sent the email. I was like, no, have you got on the phone? Have you sent reminder number one, reminder number two? I'm like, there's one, two, and three. And then we sat down. I think this is an important thing, especially for people who perhaps may have been through a similar thing to me. And he said, take me back to, younger in your life. Where did you wait before you would ask for something really long? Like, what experience did you have in your life? And I'm like, what do you mean exactly? He's like, well, did you have any experience in your life where rather than ask, you waited for the person to respond and it could take forever? And I said, yes, actually. And I said, the way that I was brought up, because my father's parents are from Jamaica, I was brought up mainly in a traditional Jamaican household at my nan and granddad's. And the rules of the house when I was a kid was, you wait till you're offered rather than ask.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, he said, the problem you have is little Leon is waiting for people to respond rather than you ask them for your money that they owe you. And I was like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And this example you gave with the person you're speaking to, it's right. Like, at the time I can remember, I don't want to like make them like feel like offended.
I don't want to make them feel uncomfortable. Yeah, hold on a second. They've made you feel uncomfortable. Yeah,
exactly. But the thing is, we carry so many programs as human beings. And a lot of the programs come from when we're young, 0 to 7 in our individuation, in the process of becoming an individual, that business, and I've heard this said many times and I'm going to share it here, is business, if you really want to grow spiritually, business is probably the ultimate way to grow spiritually, because it's going to test you spiritually, emotionally, physically, right? And from that point on, I started following up with people. I put a process in place of how to follow up with invoices and so on. And you're right. Like, there's so many things that we will come across blockages in ourselves. And it's important that we understand that they can be fixed and it doesn't reflect us on us as a human being. But there also has to be an awareness with us. Because if I didn't have that lesson with my business coach, there's no way I would have realized that was the reason. Right?
Yeah.
And since then, there's been many things about my childhood that I realized that I'm showing up as little Leon
mm-hmm.
in big Leon's body
mm-hmm.
and what I'm showing up with isn't appropriate
mm-hmm.
and it's not right and mm-hmm. it's not going to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody listening or watching, like if you just take a second around some of the areas that you're most challenged, just think, is it something to do with you and the way that you think others might perceive you or the way you're perceiving a situation? And maybe that's the thing that you need to spend a little time around to realize that, ah, I need to change my thinking, my awareness and my approach from being little me to mm-hmm. big me,
mm-hmm.
right? And what's right now? And that's not an easy thing to do, by the way,
mm-hmm.
because our ego, it blocks us on purpose. And the challenges we face in life, it's always hard to see our own deficiencies rather than somebody else's, which is why you always see this, especially online. People are so quick to criticize others, mm-hmm. right? Yep. You know, he who cast the stone
mm-hmm.
scenario, right? Mm-hmm. And none of us are infallible. None of us have perfection. And this is the beauty of us at the mm-hmm. same time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Anyway, I'm not going to digress into that one. But everyone, you're doing okay if you've got some challenges.
Yeah. I think a lot of the time we expect things to be easy because now, you know, you were talking about TV when we were younger, for example. But, you know, now you can order pretty much anything and get it delivered, right?
Yeah.
And within 24 hours.
Not only that, we couldn't order the programs on TV that you can get now either. You know, like literally not just food, but like.
Well, you remember when you first got a VCR could actually record.
I remember watching MTV just so I could hear some of my favorite tunes. And it was the same thing like radio back then in the 90s. You'd put a tape on to record for like 90 minutes just in case one of your favorite songs came on so you could have a copy.
Mm-hmm.
And look at us now. It's like subscriptions to, you know, YouTube Music or, you know, whichever platform.
Make your own
Spotify.
Playlist.
Like, you know, I've got so many playlists. Like the DJ in me hasn't gone. It's like, you know, I'm ready with everything. But it is a different world. You know, sometimes I look back and think, gosh, like where we came from in the 80s to mm-hmm. now, I'm just like, it's so amazing, the mm-hmm. changes. And this is another point as well in business. You know, you do have to change.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a quote by Muhammad Ali, and he says that if I'm the same man at 50 as I was when I was 30, I've just wasted 20 years of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. Like, mm-hmm. you do have to change. And change will be brought upon you whether you like it or not. It's just going to be your willingness to adapt and to adjust into the version of you that you need at that point in time.
Do you think you talk about spirituality? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that was necessarily something that came to you from an early age. But what do you think kind of unlocked, or was there a point where you kind of felt, hey, look, I'm blocked here. Like I'm not moving forward. I feel like there's something that I need to change or challenge. You know, like what can I do? Like how do I change things?
So I'm in business. Things are going well. It's kind of like when I was employed at the University of mm-hmm. Wolverhampton. It's like I'm just getting like these promotions. Like I'm not even trying. You know, we're not even having interviews. It's like, yeah, we're having an interview. How you doing, Leon? The job's yours.
Mm.
Like I'm like, okay, cool. So in business, things grew steadily, and then things started to grow a bit faster. And then in 2010, I had some challenges which dovetailed with the credit crunch.
Mm-hmm.
And I found my first business that I had to liquidate.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to make 3 of my employees redundant.
It's heartbreaking, isn't it?
Oh my gosh. At the time, I didn't know where I was, what I was doing, right? And I wouldn't change the experience for the world, because it taught me that I'd actually forgot what was most important, which was me and home, family, right? Yeah. And because I bent over backwards trying to, you know, help my 3 employees and prevent that from happening. Mm-hmm. And I faced so many financial challenges, clients owing us money, didn't pay and mm-hmm. whatever else. But the point that I got to is that I was working very hard.
Mm-hmm.
We put some systems in place. I think at the time we got some like ISO 9000. I don't even remember back then, like, you know, 2010, it's like 15 years ago. And like, so we'd got some good systems back then. Nothing like we get mm-hmm. now with AI and, mm-hmm. you know, can literally do everything for you. But, you know, business was working pretty well. But I just got to the stage where I realized no matter how hard I worked, the growth wasn't coming in the way that I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And you could say, oh, perhaps you had you know, expectations that were way off. Yes and no. Because then the clients I was helping at the time with the strategies that I put in place that I was using for myself, they were like going, you know, just really growing. And I'm like, something's off here. And then I think it was around 2018, probably, yeah, not long after I wrote the book. And in the book, there is chapter 10, and I talk about mindset. And I was scared to put it as the first chapter because I thought, ah, people don't really want to learn about marketing and start with mindset. The thing that I'd realized in even those years up until that point is mindset is probably one of the biggest things in business. You know, it determines everything, your success in life. But then what I also realized is no matter how hard I pushed, I wasn't getting the results that I was looking for. Like I'd done some really good things, like I was doing 100,000 a month, 100,000 a month in sales. And then things started to decline. And I was like, ah, it's not how hard I'm working. Something's off. And I think at that point, then I started to look more inward. Like, what's going on with me? And it you say maybe it wasn't something that came from young, and it actually was. But I didn't know what it was then. Because when I was younger, my dad was alive because he passed away when I was 11. He used to practice Kung Fu and he would talk to me about Chi. So, you know, I'm young, like, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, and my dad was teaching me Kung Fu. And back then I knew that there was something special inside of us. But as a kid, I didn't know what it was, you know. You go to church, you know, I was raised Christian, went to church, and then they would talk about, you know, your soul. Like, yeah, it's this thing in heaven, but no, it's actually in us. And I think that's what kind of brought it about for me. And then in business, it kind of merged when I realized that I can't work any harder. I'm outworking most people that I know, but my results are going in the total opposite direction. And that was the part that led me on to looking at myself, looking at childhood trauma, looking at blocks that I had, looking at how I respond to certain situations, meaning nervous system regulation. I'll give you an example. I remember it was about 2019. And I got a refund come through on Stripe for £15,000. It was 16,000, sorry, it's four separate payments of £4,000. It was a client requesting a refund, even though I delivered all on the work. They paid on credit card. I didn't know at the time. Refund. And I was like, shit.
Had that boss.
And at the time, I'd just about got enough cash to cover that and the month ahead. And I was like, oh shit. Sorry, Auntie Jenny. But anyway, I remember in the moment, and this was an important thing. I remember feeling tense, panicked, butterflies, like, oh shit, what am I going to do? And then realizing, what are you doing, Leon? Where has this come from? Like just in the moment. And for me, it was such a powerful moment because I'm like, get a grip. It's just money. It's not going to be easy, but it's just money. It's not like someone's got a gun to your head. And I think this is also the psychological trauma that you will face in business, which is when you create something more bigger than it actually is, no matter what it is. And look, I know things can get tense because I know there's a lot of entrepreneurs who face, I want to say suicide. Or they're facing those thoughts, right? And I understand. I genuinely understand. But for me, what's most important is that you've got a bigger purpose. And like for me, I have my children. I have my wife. I have friends, family. You know, I know for me, the most important thing is to look at myself and say, how can I fix it? And who do I need to ask? Whether it's a book, YouTube, mentor, or coach. That's the step that you must take, which is to seek help. And I love the quote from Les Brown. He's one of my favorite motivational speakers. And I love him because he reminds me of like a black preacher, which is the kind of church I went to growing up, you know, Jamaican family. And he says, ask for help, not because you're weak, but ask for help because you want to remain strong, and don't stop until you get it. So drop being professional and trying to act away and go and get the help you need so you can become who you need to be.
For sure. I will always say to people, go hire an expert. Like if your job is not HR, like if that's not your background, hire a consultant who's a HR consultant, or IT, hire a specialist in IT, hire a specialist in marketing. Like that is so important when you have a small business to understand you can't do everything.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be doing everything.
Absolutely.
Understand there are people there as a support network. And they might not be the people that you expect to be your support network, going back to our earlier conversation about who your supporters are. But they are there. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people that are in that situation, have been in that situation, will want to help you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it can, fear is paralyzing.
100%. When I had to liquidate my first company, I really didn't know what needed to be done, what options I had. And you know what? Because I asked, people shared with me, and I was like, whoa, now I've got this option, or this option. And it was one of the best things that I could have done at that time. Because I did have this kind of, I've got the S on my chest, I wanted to be Superman. And it's funny because if you, for instance, if you never took your business to like 1 million or 10 million, how could you be Superman or woman? Like, it's impossible, right? You've got to ask for help. And so for me, it's like, humble yourself to know that we're on this little rock floating around this huge universe, and it's like you're worrying about, you know, this going on, and actually it's brought to you so that you can learn the lesson.
And I think that's true of many things, is thinking about, okay, if I'm going to do this, I need to be perfect from day one. Life is not like that. And again, we'll come back to that swimming analogy, but anything, when you first started to cook, and even now, like if you cook something, sometimes you cook something you always cook and it turns out wrong for whatever reason, you burn it or whatever. And
you've been on social media while you should be watching.
And you think, how did that happen? I've been doing this right for ages. But again, in any business, you think like that, and complacency is a challenge. But growth comes from failure, and actually saying, this did not work as I anticipated, or this is not working, or this happened in a particular way, maybe not as successful as I thought it was going to be. So how do I change that? What makes that? But you can, you know, and again, you know, I've been in the same position you had to liquidate a business, had to make people redundant, and to doing that brings an emotional toll.
100%.
And anytime I've had a business where I've got people working for me, they're always people I worry about first. Can I pay my people this month? And if I can pay the people, I'm happy about that. And then I worry about whether I can pay, you know, the people collecting the bins or whoever else you've got on your on your debt list that you're trying to pay off. But just think about, you know, prioritizing. That's the important thing, isn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely. And like I said to you, like it brought home to me like the importance of like, who am I doing this for? You know, and I think it's good that you treat your team like your family. You may have a different, you know, approach to the culture of your business, but mine is, when I employ people, I understand the ripple effect that I'm having, you know, and them, their family and so on. But the realization I came when I got to that point when I had to liquidate that company was actually I needed to take care of home first. Charity starts at home. And that was the thing that I wasn't seeing at the time. And whilst I was trying to fix something over there, I was missing a whole other area over here, which is, you need to fix stuff at home. You know, make sure that's secured. And then whatever happens in business happens, because as a team, you're all trying to work towards it anyway, you know? And that was the awareness that I had back then. And I think, you know, just where I am right now, you know, a big thing that can help you in business, and it's not the only thing, but a big thing for me has been who you choose to be your partner outside of business, as in your husband or wife, or your, you know, I'm not saying you need to be married or anyone, just your partner. And Magdalena, my wife, who I've been with now in November, it'll be 10 years. She has been like a big supporter of me and very loyal, as well as loving. And I think earlier in my life, I didn't have that to that degree, right? But that was my choice, my choices, right? And I think, again, like I own everything that I've done in the past and up until now. And I think that's an important step, that when you're in business, if you are stressed out by the person that you're with at home, or they're not supporting you, or not the person, you know, they need to be for you as well, that's also a factor. And again, coming back to who you associate with is very important, because you can have toxic people that are in your family or close to you. And it's important to recognize who they are and what they bring to your life, so that perhaps you can't get them out of your life, but you can limit time with them. And I say this because there's a lot rests on your shoulders as the business owner, but there are also a lot of things that have an impact on you outside mm-hmm. of business, but you bring it into business. Mm-hmm. And it gets better with time, by the way, guys. It's not like you get all this stuff straight away. I'm only here because it's happened to me over time. But the point I'm getting to is, if you find the right people around you, whether it's your husband, your wife, your friends, your support network, business friends. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was younger, I didn't really think about business friends, but you know, networking is a big thing. And I've actually mm-hmm. met some really good friends over the years from business because I was willing to, you know, communicate, connect and think, you know, I want to be around like-minded people. Even now I'm in a mastermind with 1,000 other business owners. Mm-hmm. We meet up in different cities in the UK, mm-hmm. some abroad as well. And it's because I recognize, like, I want to be playing at a higher level where mm-hmm. there's more like-minded people mm-hmm. that I'm going to get that good approach, energy, ideas. And they're all in it to win for themselves. But
yep.
everybody going in a winning direction is a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's something to take away for your audience as well, mm-hmm. watching this.
Well, a rising tide lifts all ships, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Absolutely.
And it's so true that is the case.
Absolutely.
Because sometimes, again, we think we're on our own, but actually, if we're supporting other people and we're helping other people, mm-hmm. Then that also raises them up and raises you and starts to give you that. And I think those small business networks, you've got to find one that works for you.
Yeah.
Like, there are many out there.
I don't like going, do you want to come to a breakfast meeting? No, thanks.
No, thank you.
For me, it's like, who's in the room? What's the point of it? Where is it going?
Yeah.
And again, if you've never done networking, you're going to have to go to a few of those to figure out what you do and don't like.
Yeah. I go to one on a last Thursday of every month. Mm-hmm. It's run by the local radio station, MKFM.
Cool.
Yeah. And it is great. The first one I ever went to, where everyone is very friendly, but again, very like-minded, probably similar business size to what I'm trying to do in terms of, you know, local community and what have you. But I realized they were my tribe when I saw people doing shots of tequila at the bar at 5:30 in the evening. I was like, yes, I'm in. And they serve food. So, you know, these
food's
three things,
thing. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
friendly, tequila and food, you know, all of these things are positive.
I don't drink as much now because my wife's like, allergic to alcohol.
Oh, okay.
Cheap date, right? But like, seriously, one glass of red wine and she's like tipsy and she comes out in like this red dress. So it's like, okay. So for the past 10 years, I don't really drink so much mm-hmm. these days and it's like, I'm okay with it. But tequila, yeah, maybe.
I mean, it's what works for me, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, there are all of those kind of things. If you find something like that, then it's great.
Yeah.
Because again, we often think problems are unique to ourselves and they're absolutely they're not unique to ourselves.
No.
And that is the challenge of understanding, you know, there's other people that go through this. And even if you're, I don't know, again, we talked about coffee shop owner, if you're a coffee shop owner and something breaks, you know, versus, I don't know, if you do B2B and something happens, a campaign doesn't work out the way you expected. Actually, there's still the similarities of trying to work it through.
The principles remain the same. And I think, you know, just coming back to your point of, you know, whether it's B2B, B2C, I think it's just your willingness just to not think you've got it all figured out,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's, nobody's got it all figured out, but the people who win, and I've said this to my son many times because he just finished his A-levels. He mm-hmm. didn't want to go to uni.
Mm-hmm.
He'd done pretty well. He did maths, physics and computer science and he'd done well. He actually got the placement for uni, but he already said when he started his A-levels, he didn't want to go. He wants to set up a marketing agency. Like, okay, so
bit of inspiration amazing.
So that's what he's doing right now.
That must make you feel quite proud that he wants to follow in your footsteps like that.
You know what? I'm just, it's a bit, I'm more proud of him for wanting to just do it mm-hmm. rather than follow him. I wouldn't care what he did as mm-hmm. long as he just pursued his passions and mm-hmm. you know, so I'm proud of like him for that, but it's cool because I can directly help him, right? But I was saying to him, Ruben, you know, the C's and D students, they're the ones who employ the A's and B's,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is a bit of a throwaway comment, but there is a lot of realism in there in the sense that the C's and D's have had to work, mm-hmm. have had to figure things out, have had the problems where they needed to go and ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the A's and B's, they may have asked for help, but they're able to kind of sail through and, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. follow the protocol of mm-hmm. the industrial age education, which we're mm-hmm. speaking about, right? But the point I'm getting to in business, really, you got to be the C and D in your approach to overcoming challenges. Mm-hmm. You can still excel in your given area, you know, mm-hmm. whatever it is in your business, B2B, B2C. But I think if you can take on that approach of a C and D student who's like, you know what, I've got an appetite and hunger to still figure this out and just do the work and mm-hmm. do what I need to do. And I think that's why the C's and D's employ the A's and B's.
Yeah.
And you haven't got to go too far to look at some of the top entrepreneurs in the world and like, mm-hmm. yeah, those are those people,
mm-hmm. you know. For sure. Like Richard Branson, you know, suffered from dyslexia.
Exactly.
Did not do very well at school. Yeah. A lot of the entrepreneurs I've spoken to on the podcast mm-hmm. struggled with yeah. either the academic side of things or mm. the authoritarian yeah. side of things. So either yeah. way, they've had challenges on either side. And I think I'd never really thought about it in the way that you described it. And I think that's very true because yeah. when I look at the best leaders of people that I've had are not necessarily the best people academically,
exactly.
but actually they're the scrappy people yeah, that have had exactly. to learn and understand, and they see things that perhaps other people don't because that's they've right. had to go round in a different way
exactly.
of actually trying to identify yeah. what that looks like. So it comes to my point in the yeah. podcast where I'm asking you, I realize that there's a lot of advice that you could give people.
Oh, we could be here. Amy, we could talk for hours. I doubt I would run out of content or topics.
We should do our own radio show, shouldn't we? but yeah, if there was something that you could give to somebody as a piece of advice that mm-hmm. you feel is valuable to small business owners, startups, entrepreneurs, whether they're just starting out or whether they're already in the thick of it, mm-hmm. what do you think that might be?
It's hard to boil that down to one key thing. I think what you mentioned and what we've spoken about in this podcast is go and ask for help. Go mm-hmm. and get a mentor, or go and speak to people who have already done what you are trying to do, because it's already been done,
mm-hmm.
right? As much as you think, oh, I've got this unique idea and I want to keep it hidden away from men so nobody steals it, it's already been done, mm-hmm. right? And I think that the most important part is to go and see what other people have done
mm-hmm.
and be humble, go and learn from them, because if your idea is really that great, when you learn the lessons that they share with you, it will 10x, 100x your idea way mm-hmm. beyond you would ever think, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an important step. You know, just listen back to this podcast and, you know, whatever resonates with you, I think is important for you to take away. You know, whenever I've listened to podcasts, and I've interviewed about 400 people doing these podcasts over the years. And the biggest thing for me out of all of it is just take something away. Mm-hmm. You can't take everything and mm-hmm. implement. Take it away, implement it. If it worked, great, use it. If it didn't, move on to the next.
Yeah. And it is that thing of taking one thing at a time
mm-hmm.
because you'll go, I find myself, I'll go to a conference or I'll go to a networking event and I'll just end up with a bunch of ideas and I think, oh, great, let's do all of them at the yeah. same time. Actually, no, let's think about doing one thing mm-hmm. and seeing how that changes things, then yeah. do the second and the third and the fourth, and you might not get them in the right order, and that's okay.
Yeah.
It is okay.
And there is that book, The One mm-hmm. Thing.
Yeah.
Good book.
Yeah. Exactly. Just do one thing at a time mm-hmm. because, you know, there's the old adage of, and again, when you're stressed and you're thinking about lots of things, how do you eat an elephant? Well, hopefully you don't, because that would be really wrong, but you know, one piece at a time.
Yeah.
And that is, it's hard to hear that sometimes.
Absolutely.
But it is the way to actually tackle things, is one bit at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you've got the kids screaming. Yes, you've got to do the washing. Yes, you've got to do the dinner. Yes, you've got to do your finances and pay your people. Yeah. And, you know, there is 1,000 things to do.
Absolutely.
But there are many, there are now many tools out there that can help you do those things.
Mm-hmm. There are.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Leon. Mm-hmm. You can catch the podcast on YouTube or listen on Spotify. Give us a like, give us a comment, let us know what you thought, and we'll see you on the upside.